Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to Rogue Startups, episode 184. We're closing in on the big 200, aren't we here, Craig?
We are, man. I know we had kind of a big throwdown for episode 100. I wonder what we'll have to come up with for 200 here in a couple months.
Yeah, well, we've got a few weeks to pull something out of our asses for that one. So, you know, I kind of set the standard on 100, and now it's like, oh, damn, what are we going to do for 200 that's better than that? I hate it when I have to top
myself.
Just
in time podcast planning is...
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, things are good here. It is... So where it's like the middle of August, first part of August, and pretty much the whole continent of Europe is on vacation right now, including us, which is cool. We're in Italy for like 2.5 weeks, very much like a workcation. Like my team is like, you know, you're in Slack a lot for being on vacation. I'm like, well, I'm not really on vacation. I've kind of like minimized workload for the next couple of weeks, as we have like a fair number of things going on. But it's cool to be able to take some time away and, like, especially during the day, be able to really unplug. So I'm doing, like, email and catch up in the morning and then, like, calls and more stuff in the afternoon once, like, the U.S. gets online.
And then so wine and cheese in the evening.
And then some wine and cheese, yeah, throughout the day. So, but I mean, this definitely ties into what we're talking about today, which is like, you know, mental health and burnout avoidance and things like that, of like how we all deal with doing this for a long time at a high level. So I'll save some more of my thoughts around this, but it's a very timely topic to be talking about this, as, you know, navigating time away and making time away and making it work with the things you have to do for your job and your business is sometimes challenging, but have been enjoying the hell out of Italy. We were in Tuscany for 5 days, and now we're in the northern part of the country, like in the Lake Country, in Verona for about a week, and then we go to Venice at the end of next week for a couple of days. So
nice, yeah. You and every other European that's decided to go on vacation this month.
Yep, for sure.
Is everything super crowded?
Yeah, it's not terrible so far. Yeah, I mean, it's just average, I would say. I don't know. We've done this before, so it's not like a total surprise. But yeah, it's there's a lot of Americans here too, which is kind of funny. But hearing a lot of English, but it's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool.
How's your Italian?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. Yeah, it's pretty terrible. You know, Italian is like whatever, you know, related to French and Spanish, both of which I speak pretty decently, but you know, so I understand a lot of it, but I have a hard time speaking it because, like, you know, those words are all a little different, but
yes,
I can get around.
Yes. Very cool.
How about you?
Well, you know, things are okay here. So I've been spending a lot of time on AWPCP follow-up here. We've had sort of a support spike, I guess you could call it, in post 4.0 release, and so there's been lots of little issues. And then we're also switching over. My senior developer will be leaving here at the end of August, and the guy that's been training for the last 4 months is now kind of shepherding everything out the door. So we're finding cracks and procedures and things that he's supposed to be taking over, and, you know, we're kind of letting him run the show, but we're there to support him, which I think is a nice transition. Like, you're forced to do this, but you've got people mm-hmm. to help you do it. I won't say it's going perfectly smooth, but it's not going poorly either. So that's good. It's good to have these things come out now, not 6 months from now.
Yeah.
But yes, there's a little bit of that to deal with. And yeah, EDD is my new thorn in my side. There's lots of little stuff that my support person, Bobby, is unhappy about, and the way that they handle stuff for renewals and things like that. And I keep hearing lots of stuff from her about it. And, you know, I'm the only guy that has the support contract with EDD, so I'm submitting all the issues and waiting to hear back from them and get stuff done. but it, you know, not all of it seems like it's a priority, which is kind of frustrating. So that kind of sucks. And as far as recapture goes, I have been actively trying to manage trials here to figure out ways to make stuff smoother. So I'm like trying to solicit reviews right now to increase, you know, more people going to the App Store and downloading us. It's funny because they must be doing something on their Shopify algorithm to change stuff, because I have a rank tracker on the Shopify App Store. And if anybody's interested, you have a Shopify app, I can point you to where to find this thing here. It's a site in the UK that actually tracks all the apps in the store, and you can just sign up for subscriptions on which ones you want to look at. So you can look at yours, you can look at your competitors, all of that stuff. Anyway, so I've got mine, and they send me emails on it every day. And every day, like one day, all of a sudden, I jumped like this insane number of spots, like 500 or something overall. And I'm like, what? And since then, I've like seen, and they, you know, they break it down by which categories you're in and stuff like that, and your overall ranking in the App Store. And I'm seeing like lots and lots of movement. So they must be doing something to tweak the algorithm, because, you know, one day it'll be like you're down 5. The next day you're up 40. It's like, what? Why am I moving so much? Like I have zero updates. I put zero updates to my page in Shopify. But I'm bumping around in various things there, and I'm definitely towards the top of the category that I really want to be in. Which is good. And I'm on the first page now for several other categories, which is also beneficial and nice.
Does the rank tracker give you like breakdown by category or like search, probably not search term, but like by categories or anything, or no?
They do it by category. Yes. So each one of them, like, yeah, Shopify decided 2 years ago that they wanted to have this super complicated taxonomy system, which I think was a major mistake.
Right.
And, you know, there's like a million categories at this point, and you can be in any number of them you want. Like, they'll only let you submit to 2. But if you go ask and you point, hey, look, my competitors are in 7. I want to be in 7 too. They're like, okay, sure. You know, as long as you can demonstrate, you know, you're reasonably, your app fits into that category, they'll totally let you do it. You just have to ask the support. Yeah, but anyway, so once you get into a category, you know, that then you have to wait for it to rank and stuff like that. But they show you like all of the individual ranks on those. But if you want the search data, that's a separate thing. And then somebody actually figured it out that there's the Shopify App Store feed that you can subscribe to, and you go into Google Analytics and you set this stuff up and you create a thing in Google Sheets. It'll like magically generate a report for a date range, which is super cool. So you can actually see what things are they searching on in the App Store to get to me. So then you can start optimizing on some of those keywords, which I've done. But with all of that said, you know, just because somebody lands on your page doesn't mean that they stick with it. So, you know, there are definitely some major holes in what Shopify allows for, like, you know, when you leave something there, you can give a cancel reason. Shopify has that built in automatically, but you don't really get a choice as to what those reasons are. Like, if it was me,
know what those options
are. Yeah, if it was me, I would give some very specific things. Yeah. Because I know what, you know, I would think, I have a hypothesis as to why they would quit. But, you know, they have generic ones like app is not performing well, does not meet my needs.
Right.
I'm like,
thanks a lot.
Or other. And then they can type in something. And sometimes in a rare case, they type in other. I actually get a real reason that comes out that I'm like, oh, that's something useful. But like, does not meet my needs. App is not performing well. This is my favorite one, because I'll see somebody will install it, and literally 6 minutes later, they'll uninstall and say app is not performing well. I'm like, we haven't even sent a goddamn email for you yet. How would you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like that data is so misleading. It's so terrible. And a lot of the times, you know, it's just app does not meet my needs. Well, what are your needs? Tell me what your needs were. Maybe, you know, I have found like somebody uninstalled and picked up one of my competitors, and I was in contact with her. She got my trial ended email, and she actually responded to it. And so I got to have a conversation with her, which was great. But when I had the conversation, she's like, oh, well, I went to this other competitor because they have this email feature that I didn't find in Recapture. And I'm like, Shit. We do have that, and here's all the documentation on it. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, come on back, because we definitely have that. But as soon as I found that out, I'm like, oh, I should change an onboarding email. I should make sure that people are more aware of these things. And, you know, how can I surface this better? So, you know, I'm trying to optimize that experience through very limited feedback and poor data at this point. And I'm also trying to, like, you know, I can see when I'm looking at the dashboard of customers that are on here, you know, there are customers that just have zero revenue, and, you know, either that's a staging store or it's a brand new store, but I can't really help them. But there are a lot of stores where they're like, oh yeah, you know, you look at their MRR and it's like, yeah, they have 7,000 a month. I can do something with 7,000 a month. But then they do things like they didn't activate recapture at all. And it just sat there for 2 weeks. And I'm like, why? I don't have the trial ending like fine-tuned in such a way that it can say, oh, well, I can see that you have this much revenue and you didn't send any activation, like send this custom email here. And it doesn't happen quite enough for me to want to do that. So I'm going through manually and I'm sending emails to these people trying to get a response and find out, you know, like I sent 8 or 10 of them. And I got somebody to come back as a paid customer. I'm like, oh, okay. But they never responded to me. I just said, hey, here's what we did for you. Why didn't you sign up? And then all of a sudden they're like, signing up. I'm like, okay, all right, great. So
that's great, but that's also not helpful, right? Because you want to know like the why or the how, right?
Yeah, I want to know where we like – did they not know that we got this? Did they miss that email? Do I need to send more than one of those? Like – I'm not sure what it is that I missed. So yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. Since we're getting more customers, I want to make sure that our top of the funnel, you know, that we're not just leaking people out because I'm doing a poor job onboarding them or they're missing something key that they really need. But figuring out what that is proving a little tricky. So
yeah, this rings home. So we are opening the top of our funnel up quite a bit for Castos, and which is great. It's having really positive impacts, but part of it is we're getting like different type of customer in using the product. And so what we're seeing is we're having a lot of people asking questions that like people haven't asked before because they were like further down in the funnel when they signed up and more knowledgeable about podcasting in general and WordPress and things like that. And so we have customers coming in now who need more kind of like basic education on things. And we have a ton of it. But our onboarding emails have been really like feature and benefit driven instead of like how to start a podcast driven.
Right.
So it's so similar to what you're saying. Denise, our marketer, is starting the middle of the month, and that is going to be her charge, is to go through all of our onboarding emails from her perspective, like her personal perspective, as like she knows a fair amount about podcasting, but it's all pretty recent. So kind of like, what are we saying that doesn't make sense? So I don't know, it might be worth like getting a second set of eyes from somebody who's not super ingrained in a Shopify e-commerce, you know, abandoned cart recovery world to say, yeah, Dave, this is a great email, but I barely get what you're talking about because this is like all over my head. Because I think we definitely write some of those emails that assume people are kind of WordPress pretty savvy, I guess I would say, or podcast pretty savvy, and that's not always going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that like WriteMessage was designed for, right? So you have, you're trying to figure out where they're at in their journey so that you can give them the right experience and aim the content or the CTAs or just the upgrades or whatever it is you're trying to send them to that point in the journey. And that's great, but the problem I'm finding is making people like answer those questions. Cuz I have WriteMessage on the site and my click-through rate on those things is like 28% on the first question. No, it's 36% on the first question, and then it like drops down to 28, and then I think we have a third question, and that one's like 11. So like it drops off real fast. Like they just don't know like how many questions are you going to bombard me with, and after one, they're already annoyed. So you don't get a ton of information to enrich them, and I kind of need like I need something that's enough to point out what I could do for them, but I can't. I can't do that in just two questions. And so, you know, I haven't had time to expand on that, but I was just looking at my write message data the other day and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's good that my Shopify, you know, thing has grown. However, if you're not telling me you're a store owner or an agency. Oh, that was the other thing. I did notice it used to be, I thought I, when I was doing Magento, I had about a 50-50 split between store owners and agencies. And now with Shopify, that is skewing very heavy to store owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a more do-it-yourself tool.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's like 72% now of store owners versus agencies, which kind of surprised me. Because when I was, you know, starting out with Magento, everybody was like, oh, yeah, you should do partnerships with agencies because that's where you're going to get a good portion of your business. And, you know, based on what I saw early on in Write Message, that was fairly accurate. But that's not, it's not turning out to be the case in Shopify. So, you know, I'm definitely picking up the more self-service folks. And that's okay. That's great. You know, if I'm the self-service tool and Klaviyo is the agency tool, that's fine. That's a perfect split. I have no problem with that split. So,
but you gotta be talking that language.
I got it. Yeah.
And I got it. Talking to those people at that point in their journey and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got to find them. I got to speak to them with the concerns that they have at that point in the journey. And I think I'm getting a better idea of that based on just conversations I'm having. And, you know, people do like a trial end and I send an email at the trial end saying, hey, you know, do you want some help with your emails? Because that's the most common problem that people have. And so originally I had kicked around the idea of doing like a concierge onboarding for a price. And I never followed through with that because I wasn't really sure that that was what the demand had there. And I've had a few people that have responded to that email, and what I've gone and done, because it usually doesn't take very long. The hard part is getting them to answer like 7 questions. And if I can get them to answer those 7 questions, I can go in and edit their emails in like 30 minutes and have the whole thing set up with, you know, a pretty decent converting thing that they can try. Because a lot of times they'll just stick with my standard content, which is okay. But, you know, everybody else is using the standard content too. And the standard content is, it's very basic and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't specifically talk to their customers and their needs. So I ask, you know, voice of the customer kind of questions. What's your audience like? What are their biggest concerns? What do they, you know, what's their demographic? And then I try to like spice up stuff, you know, I'll maybe use imagery or puns or jokes that specifically talk to that demographic. Like I just did one recently for a mom boutique, and they have like some very specific customer things. So I made up a whole thing that was talking about like, you know, postpartum baby toddler stuff. You know, I could talk about that from a parent's perspective, and then threw in some jokes that I found in there about new moms and stuff like that, that kind of all tied it together. And, you know, she was really excited with this content. It seemed like it was doing a lot better than the basic stuff for her audience there. So, you know, it's all about finding that connection and making that happen. But, you know, it doesn't seem like people are like dying to have me write that. I get maybe 1 or 2 of those requests a month. Maybe if I pushed it harder, I'd see more of it. But yeah, I mean, getting, you know, finding that educational thing there, because I'm not really sure. Some of the people I get on my platform, they're very sophisticated. They come in here and they're like, I want to define these segments and I want to do this custom HTML and I want to send these kinds of emails at this kind of timing. Can I do all that? And I'm like, hell yeah, you can. And they're like, good, here we go, sign me up. And then they turn out to be a pretty decent sized store. So they obviously have a lot of experience with that. But you can't see what that looks like, you know, at the very beginning of a trial or even a week into the trial. Cause I'm finding a lot of these stores, the big stores, they'll bring in like a little teeny tiny store and test me out. And then only after that little teeny tiny store is doing something that they think is okay, then they'll like smack in all these stores. Like I had one store that said, yeah, we've got all these brands that we're going to do, but you know, we're just going to try you out in this one thing here. I was like, okay. And they are bringing in, you know, almost 4 figures of revenue a month now because of all the stores that they brought in and that they, you know, they're on the new charge-based pricing. So they're scaling based on the stuff that I'm sending out. They're an awesome expansion customer. But, you know, it took me having to win them over incrementally to get all of their brands on here because they needed that trust. They, you know, they're bringing a lot to the table. So, Yeah.
I wonder if for the like the custom onboarding stuff, like could you send them that email to say, hey, you know, we'll write your emails for you, or we'll revise the ones you already have, answer these, you know, few questions in a type form, and just link to the type form right in that email. Is that what you do, or do you say, you know, do you need some help with emails?
What I do right now is I let them go through the whole onboarding process. I don't really let them know about this. It's only when they get to trial end and they haven't recovered enough that I basically offer, would you like us to write your emails? So I haven't done that up front as a suggestion. I could. Yeah, that definitely puts me on the spot to do more work. And I've been a little more hesitant to go that route because here's one thing I found. So there's a split on the trial end emails where I get two sets of stores coming to me. One of them, they have revenue, and then I'll do that email suggestion. The other ones have nothing. And they're like, yeah, I want help with my emails. And then I'm like, you know, email is not the source of your woes here. Let me tell you what is. And so I actually have a save snippet in Text Expander where I'm like, no revenue. And I go through this whole thing about it. We had all this stuff set up on here. And it looks like you did all of this, but your cart feed is showing crickets. And, you know, your emails are basically a ghost town of conversions. And I would focus on traffic and pushing people to your store first. Once you're at this level of revenue, we can really start to do good for you. And at beyond this level of revenue, it's a no-brainer. But at zero, you got to focus on this first, you know? So that's why I don't want to offer the emails up front, because I get more of those emails with the no revenue than I get of the other ones where they do. So I want to be very cautious in how I offer that, because that's a lot of time out for me.
Yeah, that's a bummer. That's a bummer. I wonder if you could almost just send it to people that have a lot of revenue, because you definitely get some like false negatives, right? Or like those staging stores or whatever. But if you have someone doing a decent amount of volume, I wonder if you could send it just to those people.
There probably is a way I could segment in the middle of the trial, say a week into the trial, I can look to say, all right, do you have more than this in MRR? And have you recovered less than this in your emails, or was your recovery rate below this? Yeah. And if it is, then send the thing to offer them with the help with the emails and then do an extension on the trial while they're still active. That might actually be more effective, because trying to bring them, you know, I found two things. Bringing them back after the trial is over is hard. Bringing them back after they've uninstalled, you might as well try to move a mountain or have an act of Congress to do this, because it's fucking impossible. Like when they
might as well try to enact gun control or something.
Exactly. Gun control in the United States would be easier than bringing back some of these customers after they install. Uninstall.
What a week. Oh my God. Fuck. I know. I won't even, because I've done it before. I won't even, but it's just amazing.
Yeah. Everyone just, you know, cuts me to the core at this point. Political sidebar there. Yeah. Fucking gun control.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so speaking of mental health, because that seems to be a core debate point of gun control, let's talk about founder mental health, because that was the topic that I really wanted to cover this week. And so I will reveal why I actually want to talk about that. So my freelancing client, I've been at them now for 9 years, 5 months, and some number of days. Long, long time. I've never worked for any client other than myself for that length of period of time. And certainly in the last 2 years, I've ended up on a team where things have turned kind of toxic, to a point where at first, you know, I was asked to join this team to help remedy this toxicity and then introduce things that would help alleviate this, make everybody more functional. You know, as a senior guy, sometimes you get asked to do that as a consultant. That's a role that I've played on several occasions. And a lot of times it's been pretty successful. Sometimes there's resistance and it's not always fun. You know, it's very janitorial, but you know, when you can get people working together and they're more effective on software and the output is better, you know, there's a sense of accomplishment and a sense of pride to it. However, in the last 12 months, that, you know, being dropped into this team and trying to affect that kind of change has turned out to be equivalent to pounding my head on the Berlin Wall, expecting it to come down. Yeah. So I'm walking away with a headache, and in the last 2 to 3 to 4 months, the situation politically internally has changed quite a bit to where the toxicity has, like, you know, 10x'd. So we have 10x toxic engineers, not just 10x engineers. And yeah. And so I'm still on this team, and this toxicity is there, and it's affecting me. Burnout is imminent. I am actively looking to change freelancing jobs at this point, because I'm still not at a point where I could support myself on everything else. But like last night, my wife was like, you seem really disconnected. And, you know, I didn't really feel like we had any emotional bonding time today. And, you know, I just kind of let it all out last night. I had been holding it in and trying to process it and eat it, but it was just, you know, I'm at a point where I have to fucking psych myself up to go to work every morning for half an hour. So I'm sitting outside with my coffee, sipping it, going, all right, you can do this another day. You can pull this out. You know, you got this thing to work on today, whatever. And it's not sustainable. It's killing me at this point. It's totally killing me. And the conversation I had with my wife was last night, it was, you know, you have to change. And I'm like, I know, I've got to change this. And so, you know, a week ago I started actively looking for a new position, and, put the resume together after 9 years and 5 months of not ever touching it, which is hilarious. Also kind of sad, because then you go back and look at your stuff and you're like, 9 years have passed and that's all I've done, huh? Shit. So yeah. Had to, you know, put that together and send that out. And so that's where I'm at. I'm in kind of burnout mode right now, which really sucks for all other stuff.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, exactly, because I'm sure it affects your ability to perform at a high level with the plugins and with Recapture when your day job is kind of sucking the emotional life out of you, or, you know, whatever, as it pertains to work. So the ability to move those businesses forward is really hampered with what the day job is doing. And I totally relate. And when I was, you know, day jobbing, it was really, really, really stressful. And it was all I could do to keep my head above water a lot of times. And I think that the times when it seems like people are able to balance the day job or the consulting with the side project is when pretty much everything is low stress, right? Like, the side projects have to be low stress. The business, the day job or the consulting has to be low stress. Family has to be low stress and supportive. Yeah. And so I wonder if, like, as you're looking at these other opportunities for like another consulting client, like, could you take something that's less prestigious or less money or something, but also is less stress and less involvement, maybe no travel, to give you the little bit of money you need, but more time and mental energy to focus on, like, Recapture, because that's the ultimate goal, right? It's like, you'd rather not consult at all. So maybe, like, try to take a half a step away from consulting as like an exit path. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. And, you know, so I'm consulting in financial services. And for those of you in the audience that are not familiar, so there are several sectors in software that pay significantly more than other sectors within IT, which is already pretty highly paid to start with. But if you're in, you know, certain areas such as insurance, investment, financial services, banking, they just have more money to throw around. And the way that they attract people to these traditionally, I'll just call it what it is bluntly, boring industries, where people are like, do I really want to sit there and basically do software for accounting all day? You know, that was the mentality that kind of went into this. They offer more money. And so, you know, I've been consulting in financial services. So wherever I go at this point, if it is outside of this sector, it will definitely be a pay cut. And my wife and I have had that discussion. So the stress level would definitely go down, because there is definitely a lot of high pressure stuff that goes along with financial services. In any financial services job, this is not the first one I've had. Yeah. And so there are definitely lower pressure sectors that you can work for. And I would absolutely positively welcome that. I'm already 100% remote. So, you know, lower travel, I don't, you know, I travel 25% of the time out to their site in California. But, you know, if I could travel not at all, or once a quarter or whatever, that would certainly be okay as well. And, you know, a lot of the 100% remotes, they maybe have like a once a year for a get together, twice a year, something like that. But yeah, it's a question of what's available, what fits my skills, what the consulting company that I work through, what they have available, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, the good news is I'm not being forced out of the company at this point. That is not an issue. So I do have some time to look and pick something that is a good step. So I'm not forced to jump. I can choose to go in a direction that I want to, as opposed to take the first thing that comes up. Otherwise I'm screwed kind of a situation. That's good. That's good. But you know, that also means I don't know when something's going to be up and available. And, you know, my wife and I have had the discussion about finances and stuff like that. Like if I did get kicked out, what would that look like? And would we be okay? And the answer is yes. Cause you know, we've saved up money. So we have that, but we would obviously prefer not to use that, because if I did go somewhere else and we needed it there, we would have less of a opportunity to replenish that if we needed to use it now and then had to use it again later. I mean, I definitely want to reduce that stress. And I think just a change of scenery at this point after 9 years and 5 months is due. But, you know, I was looking, so you shared a link with me before we started this podcast from Sherry Walling. And she has a list here. It says, seek help if you begin to experience the three hallmarks of burnout: physical and emotional exhaustion. Yep, that's me. At the end of the day, you know, I've got maybe a couple of hours where I can sort of keep it together for the kids and the family stuff and dinner and all of that. But after about 8:30, I'm like, I need downtime. I want downtime. It's, I need downtime. Like I can't unwind and go to bed if I don't have something. I'm just ready to shut down at that point. Cynicism and detachment. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean,
no, that's been going on for a while.
I've always been a little bit cynical, but you know, this cynicism is definitely going up, and I find myself having to be detached a lot of the times mentally from work because of that toxicity there, to just preserve my psyche. And then the last one is like feeling a lack of accomplishment and ineffectiveness. And I'm absolutely feeling that as well. So yeah, it's time, man. It's time.
Yeah, man. I feel for you for sure. I mean, I have my own, we all have our own set of stresses to deal with, but to hear that this one is particularly affecting you and you're kind of at that point, is a bummer. It's a bummer to hear, because I've totally been there. And I don't have a ton of great advice about like things to do to avoid it, because I think that, like, I don't know, it's kind of like inevitable. Like when your body decides physiologically that it can't handle what you're putting it through, then you have to take yourself out of the situation. I think that you're going down the right path to say, like, this job and the situation that I'm in and the people that I'm working with or the culture or whatever is not conducive in the long term to me being happy. And so I'm going to go seek something else. I think that like your body is putting up a really good kind of early warning system there to say like, Dave, this is not happening. Let's go do something else before I really decide to fuck you over.
Yes. And I mean,
physically, you know, and so like you're able to say what you just said, like, okay, well, I have, you know, a couple months to go figure this out and I'm not happy, but I know that I'm looking, and that gives me some solace and I can kind of look forward to something a little different. You know, I think that it would be interesting to have Sherry on to talk more about like dealing with stress. We did, she came to our retreat a couple weeks ago. We did a breathing exercise.
Uh-huh.
That was super interesting. So I'm sure we'll try to link up like an article about this in the show notes, but it was just a really kind of like meditative breathing exercise that was really helpful just for like, acknowledging what's going on in your mind and finding some peace and stuff like that. So I don't know if that might be helpful, from a practical perspective to kind of manage some of the things that are going on from a day-to-day basis, because yeah, you gotta make the best of the situation while you're still in it, even if you're trying to kind of get out of it into something else.
Yeah, if you could link to something like that in the show notes, I'm sure that others in the audience would benefit from that, not just me.
Yeah.
That would be excellent.
Yeah. We should have her on to talk more about this. I think it's legit thing that folks go through. It's funny. I put myself under more pressure, I think, as being part of Tiny Seed to kind of perform. And I found myself like being more healthy lately, which is bizarre because it's funny. I'm not like a healthy person. Like I'm not like a health nut, but I found that I'm able to perform better. I'm able to work better and longer and concentrate more if I'm healthy. So like getting some
Oh,
exercise,
yeah.
sleeping a decent amount, not drinking as much.
You do live in
All those
France.
things like,
You can't not have the wine, right?
yeah. I mean, it's yeah. So like, I think that's where I've landed a little bit is like being healthier as a means to an end a little bit, and that's a terrible thing to admit out loud. But like, if I'm able to deal with work better and work more and more effectively by being a little healthier, then that's a huge win all around it. One, I'm more healthy, but two, I am reducing some of the external stress that's brought on by work. So I don't know. Are you able and wanting to do things like exercise and do yoga and stuff like that, or is that not on the map these days?
I actually do regular exercise already. So I
Nice.
do an Israeli martial arts called Krav Maga, and I do that usually 2 days a week. And one of those days, there's yoga that goes on right afterwards. So the past 2 weekends I've missed because we were doing some remodeling for our new trailer, and that was an all day sort of thing. So I was, but there was plenty of exercise to be had there, so I didn't really feel all that guilty about it. But yeah, no, I do regular exercise, and my wife and I have always eaten pretty well, pretty healthy. We don't have a lot of junk food around here. Dessert happens maybe once a week. Most of the time it's like fruit stuff, and we're not doing a lot of junk food or anything like that. So, I mean, those hacks went in a long time ago just for general health, and I totally agree that it makes a huge difference. Like, I get regular sleep. I sleep really well, so that's not an issue. I know that's a big deal for a lot of people. I'm not affected by that, so I'm very happy. It's easy for me to get, 8 hours sleep pretty quickly, and or easily, I should say, quickly. Who get what? I can get 8 hours of sleep in 4? No, I don't think so. That was an idiotic comment. So yeah, I mean, I get plenty of sleep. We eat pretty well around here. Sometimes we drink wine or have stuff after dinner or whatever, like whiskey, but it's not excessive. It's rarely more than one, two drinks tops, a couple, 3 times a week. So, I mean, even that's not super excessive. So,
Yeah.
I probably could do more exercise because 2 times a week is not really enough. But there's also the balance of the schedule, which is what I was trying to come up with. So yeah, I could probably do that. We could probably add back in meditation. We used to do that. We haven't been doing that for a long time, so that would probably help as well.
Yeah, man, I think some of these things is like if you put this number on, I have to exercise 4 times a week and I have to meditate 30 minutes every day and I have to do all this stuff, then it becomes more stressful
It
to
can.
do all
Oh,
that
it absolutely
stuff
can. Yeah. Yeah.
than to say like I'm just going to be more healthy and I'm just going to be conscious of the fact that I'm more healthy and it's not going to take up any more time in my day or whatever. Like, I don't know, and this is like a little bit of like the living in Europe for 3 years kind of thing. Like there is much less like going to the gym here than in the US, I think. Like people are just healthier. Like they walk and they eat healthy food and don't have to then like compensate by going to the gym and lifting a bunch of heavy weights and stuff. And this is a huge tangent, but I'm very much in the like efficient health thing these days of like just live better and the health takes care of itself.
Yeah, I think you can optimize things in a very different way by just asking yourself when you're about to do something, whether it's eat a meal, have a drink, go for a walk, sit down and rest, you know, is this a healthy choice right now? It's a simple yes or no question. It can happen every single time that you have one, but you ask yourself, is this a healthy choice? And once you start doing that on a regular basis, you can take a mindful look at your habits and your choices, right?
Yep. You know, the thing I have to throw out is, and I don't know if it would be productive or more stressful, is to think about like what the path to not consulting anymore looks like. You know, like we talked about it a little bit offline of like, you know, what could like take and recapture to full-time role look like, and whatever that looks like, but like kind of putting it on paper and say like, okay, we're at this revenue now, we need to get this revenue, and or I need to have saved up this much money to feel comfortable, you know, bridging that gap and stuff like that. It might help like detach a little bit from some of the stuff that's going on at work to say like, this sucks right now, but this will not suck forever because I have this plan, and the plan says that in, you know, 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years or whatever it is, I'm going to be done because I got the numbers right here and they say that we'll have enough money or revenue or savings or whatever to be able to not mess around with these jokers consulting customers anymore. It might be something to think about just from like, it might not happen today. It might happen tomorrow, but just knowing that you think you know when it will happen might be helpful. It surely got me through like that last 6 months or a year of the day job when it was really pretty hardcore stress and traveling and stuff, just because I like freaking knew like how many days until I was going to quit. And it just lets you just kind of give them the finger like in your mind, you know, and you're just like, hey, that's cool. Yep, I'll do that. No problem, because I'm going to be gone in 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever.
You know, I've had that in my head, but I've never committed it to like, you know, I won't say to paper. For me, it would be a spreadsheet. But you know, I've never committed that to a spreadsheet in, I think I did one time just to run some numbers, but then the numbers were so ridiculously huge that I said, all right, well, fuck it. I don't need to come back to this. but that was way before recapture. I think that was when I was doing Support Vine. Like, how big did Support Vine have to get before I do that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got depressed cause I wasn't seeing any growth and I couldn't get users and product market fit, all that stuff. But yeah, I think that's an excellent exercise, because I mean, this is something that, you know, my wife and I would be looking at a pretty radical spending change. You know, I could say, look, you know, we can get there. I can quit this now, but here's what has to happen to do that. And are you okay with that for this length of period of time? Because, you know, there's definite uncertainty, and I don't know how long it's going to take to get above that and grow past a certain point. But yeah, I haven't done that. In fact, we were having conversations about YNAB being wildly out of date because I subscribed to it earlier this year. And then probably about 3-4 months ago, I stopped updating it like an idiot. So now it's just like this myriad, you know, talk about more stress and work, right? I've got all this pending updates in YNAB that I have to catch up with so that we can figure out where we're at before we can decide to move forward there. So there's something else, right?
Yep.
So if you think you have it together out there, if you think Craig and I have it together, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. Reminds me of something I saw on Twitter lately. Like, if you think it's all sunshine and roses for somebody's particular circumstance, go talk to them. And then after a while, you'll be like, oh, that's not as fun as I thought it was.
Yeah.
So here you go. The raw stuff coming out on Rogue Startups.
No, I mean, it's good. I think we do a good job of like sharing kind of what's going on personally with us with like, you know, some actual tactical stuff that folks can learn from and not just feel sorry for us. But both are important, because if you don't talk about the bad stuff, then someone who's listening that is just getting into this thinks that it's all sunshine and roses, and it's definitely not.
No, hell no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for those who are listening, if you have any kind of thoughts or suggestions for all of us on kind of maintaining mental health as a startup founder, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com, or leave a comment in the post for this episode, roguestartups.com. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you because I think it's something that all of us definitely have to kind of deal with and manage on a long-term basis. I don't think there's anybody that's immune from the self-doubt and the struggles and the inner talk that goes on in your head. So yeah, folks out there that have kind of gone through this and come out the other side feeling better and have a way to deal with it, please let us know and we'll share it with everyone on the next episode.
Except for tequila and shots. I won't share those with you on the next episode.
I won't share my tequila shots. Yeah, and if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone who you think would find it helpful as well. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.